Welcome to Tech Marketing Trends, the podcast where we delve into the strategies, experiences, and insights that shape the dynamic world of sales and marketing in the tech sector. I'm your host, Jacob Lundgren, and I'm the CEO of BrightVision. In today's episode, we promise to do a deep dive into the evolving role of sales enablement and the critical impact of the tech industry's sales processes. And we have a seasoned expert with us here today, Paul Butterfield, who is joining us to discuss sales enablement and something that he has worked a lot with in many roles that spans across notable companies like Intuit, NICE, General Electric, Vonage, Infrastructure, before steering the helm now at Revenue Flywheel Group. And his journey and contributions to sales enablement have not only shaped his career, but also left a significant mark on our industry. So Paul is celebrated for his innovative approach to enhancing sales teams' effectiveness, his strategic insights in customer journey enablement, and thought leadership in leveraging tech to empower sales process. But without further ado, let's welcome Paul Butterfield to Tech Marketing Trends. It's good to have you with us, Paul.
I'm excited to be here. Thank you for having me on. I love to talk about this stuff. So,
yes, and we're excited to be able to talk about this to a true expert in the sales enablement space. But if there is a few of our listeners who haven't come across you or your content or thoughts, maybe you can just give us a little bit of a short background on what you have done and what you're up to these days.
Well, thank you for the very kind introduction. I'll try to just augment that maybe a little bit. When I think of myself, I still think of myself as a sales guy, first and foremost. I grew up in sales. I love sales. It is the greatest profession in the world, although it's not easy. I'd be the first to admit that. And as you said, was fortunate enough to learn at some world-class companies, such as HP, Microsoft, Intuit, et cetera, and then ultimately move into some sales leadership roles there and be involved with some fairly substantial tech rollouts over my career, things like Microsoft Office for Mac. My teams rolled that out, helped roll out some of the early Dynamics products, that sort of thing. So enjoyed doing that. But what I really like and what really gets me excited is how that sales happens. Because in my experience, the bar is still low in the experience that many of us have in the selling process. And so the opportunity to differentiate as sellers by how we interact and how we sell is that's what gets me excited, because I've seen what it can do. So
awesome. So interesting. And yeah, I know we have a lot of stuff to share here today. So exciting to hear all those experiences you have done. But you also have a story about, you know, quite an unexpected journey into sales enablement and how it has shaped your career and, you know, a lot of your approaches to sales training and development over the last 10, 15 years. So maybe you can share a little bit about that as well.
Sure, I'd be happy to. If we rewind about 12 years, well, more than that, about 14, 15 years, I was a sales director at a SaaS company called InContact, now owned by the NICE Corporation, but at the time it was just InContact. We were publicly traded, about $225 million contact center as a service company. So I was leading a sales team. I had the Western North American team. And during my tenure there, about halfway through, we had a change in senior leadership. Our EVP of sales, the one who had hired me, left. And of course, someone came in to replace him. And I think Bill Robinson was the new EVP's name. And he'd been there about 3 months. So now we're at September of 2012. I walk into his office for my regular Friday morning one-on-one, mid-September, 2 weeks before the end of the quarter. You know what's in my head and what I'm prepared to go in and talk about. And yes, he wanted to talk about that a little bit, but he's completely surprised me, because at one point he walked over to his whiteboard. He wrote the words sales enablement. Now, to be honest, in September of 2012, that was not a term I'd heard before. And I'd been in the sales game for a long time, but it was just new to me. And then he went on to tell me what his research, what he had found out about sales enablement and what it was doing in other companies. He outlined his objectives for why he wanted it there, because the reality was there was no professional development in our company for employees of any department. And, you know, after 2.5 days of orientation with HR, you were really left on your own, or hopefully you had a manager that saw the value in training. And that's what Bill had observed about me. Two things. I had invested heavily, what I later learned to become, learn what was being called enablement. I was just doing for my sales team because, number one, as leaders, I believe we have a moral obligation to help our people to invest in them and help them become their best selves professionally. But number two, very selfishly, I had a number to hit. And so if there was going to be any sort of development for my salespeople, I needed to go out and do it. So he'd observe, and some of the things I did were substantial. I created the first demo certification program, for example, in the company. I made my team go through it. And then all of a sudden, the leadership looked at it and said, oh, well, everybody needs to do that. So there were some substantial things. And his observation was that he, as much as, I was doing for my team, he needed me to go home and think about over the weekend if I was willing to take on a new role that he would create, where I would scale that across the entire revenue org. As a new EVP, his mandate was to take us from 225 to 500 inside of 3 years, if possible. And he knew that he could not grow the sales team and hit that number without enablement. So and he said, come back Monday, give me your answer. And if the answer is yes, what would you do in the first 30, 60, 90 days? So here we are 12 years later. But it turns out that I was good at it. We saw some phenomenal. I mean, oh, trust me, I made plenty of mistakes that first time around. But it was a great way to be introduced and able to go build enablement.
Fantastic. Really exciting. And what an opportunity you got that
It
actually
was.
became quite career defining for you in many senses. And let's maybe dive into the, sales enablement space now and the topics around there. But maybe we should just start to define a little bit, how would you define sales enablement? How do you define, metrics or things to prioritize in terms of sales enablement and so forth? So maybe you can just start on the top a little bit and give an introduction to the space in itself.
Sure. When I think of enablement and sales enablement, we could start with that term. I think we're going to get into parsing that a little bit because I view it a little differently than just sales. But enablement at the highest level to me is providing all customer-facing teams with the methodology, the skills, the business acumen, all of the things they need to successfully differentiate themselves through an exceptional customer experience, rather than relying on product features or even worse, discount pricing to set them apart from the competition and win more often. And I've seen where that can happen in the field. It's not theoretical. The other thing to me that's always been key about enablement, and I'm sure this bias comes from many years in the sales field, either selling or leading sellers and sitting through trainings that were just a waste of time, to be honest, right? And that's a very frustrating experience. So then, when given the opportunity to go and do this thing by my boss, one of my first things is whatever we do, we need to be able to show some reasonable correlation back to impact. Because if it's not helping the sales team sell more, if it's not helping the SDRs convert more, the CSMs retain more, then we're doing it wrong and we're wasting people's time. So to me, at the very raw bedrock, those are the foundational things that I build on. And build a
Awesome.
strategy around.
Yeah. So supporting and enabling the again, sales team, SDR team, and customer success teams with tools, methods, educations, and systems, and everything around that. Really exciting. So a cross-functional role in its its finest definition, so to say, but that spans over a lot of stuff there. So, I know this is an area where a lot of companies are struggling, of course, and I suppose that's also why, why there's so much work going on in the sales enablement space, not only in technology and providers, but overall. But if you can talk a little bit about more exploring the most common challenges and maybe also what does success look like and how do you measure that when it comes to sales enablement?
Okay. To me, the challenge, and I think what you're asking, what are the challenges we're trying to overcome? Yes. Okay. So if we rewind to how I came into this, and this is why I felt like this was a very, I couldn't have asked for a better environment to figure this enablement thing out. The good news is, the bad news is, I should say, it was a new field and there was not a lot on the internet. Some work was being done by Forrester and some of the analysts there. I mean, there were some things I was able to find out, but for the most part, it was still white space. That's the bad news, but that's also the good news. And here's why I say that. When no one's telling you how to do something, you have to go figure it out, which means you get to be innovative. So I gathered together all of the sales leaders that I had been co-selling with for some time and said, all right, this is our opportunity. This is what Bill's given me for. I've got charter, I've got budget, I've got what I need to go do this. Here's his outcomes. How do we want to do this? So think about that in a room with all of my fellow sales leaders, mapping out what that first inning would look like. And again, where no one had showed us how to do it, we were strictly focused on solving problems. And so I share that because, to answer your question, if you look across the chain of contacts that a prospect and then hopefully customer has with a company, from a customer standpoint, it's all interconnected. They don't know or care that the CS team or the professional services team or the SDR team all report to different departments. To them, it's one experience. And I knew from coming off the front lines with my sales team that our handoff, for example, to professional services and customer success lacked quite a bit. And there were opportunities, substantial opportunities sometimes, that didn't turn up because of how poorly that went. I knew from experience that I didn't want my sellers to go out and be talking about products all the time. I wanted them to be talking to the customers about business. Yet, if marketing and product are only putting out information and content that talks about features, that becomes much more difficult for the sales team to do. And so it really goes in both directions. And so for a unified experience for the customer, that's why we needed to look across all of those teams. Now, to be fair, in that early stage, I had to focus just on sales. We had so much to figure out. We started with that. But I'd say it was not by the end of the first year of having the sales enablement built and that going pretty well, that then we started to bring in those other groups. But those were my reasons why doing it. I just knew that if we didn't do that, the sales, no matter what we did with sales, was still not going to achieve the results we wanted, which were ultimately happy customers that don't churn.
Mm. And what are the success metrics that you have learned to, you know, really focus on? Because there's so many moving parts in this space, you know?
First thing you have to do is break it down into leading and lagging indicators. Mm-hmm. I'll start with lagging indicators because, again, my view of it, this is where I always do. When I build a strategy, I use a concept. I didn't create it. I'm sure some of your listeners are familiar with it. It's called strategy mapping. It's from a book called The Strategy Focused Organization from Harvard Business Press, Kaplan and Norton, if anyone wants to look it up. Mm-hmm. It is a textbook. It's a bit of a dry read. However, the concept in there of building your strategy based on the three top revenue outcomes that the organization's trying to achieve so that every element of your strategy flows back to that and then measuring that is gold. So I have used that multiple times. So we start, to me, yes, it's a lagging indicator, but those revenue outcomes have always got to be first and foremost in our mind. Now, the beauty of that concept, of that methodology that I'm talking about that I learned, is that you then scorecard that. And that's where you start to break it down. So say, for example, we've mapped to the, you know, revenue outcomes for the next 18 months. One of my strategy elements is this is a real one that I've used, that we want to create a unified, equitable experience for all global teams. That's a very difficult thing, at least speaking for U.S. companies I've worked for. Often, those not in North America are left behind a bit, and that's not acceptable. And so that is a critical strategy element that's going to impact revenue in the what for us are international regions. So now how am I going to measure that? Well, I'm going to start with my baseline. What is that experience like today if you're not in North America from a training perspective? You and I were just talking about this. You being asked to get up at 5 a.m. to go to a training, or are you being accommodated during your reasonable business hours, that sort of thing? But then how are we going to change that? So right now, here's our current state. How are we going to change that? And we scorecard that across the next quarters. And how are we incrementally, what are we doing? Some of it are numerical tracking. Some of it might be experience tracking, like internal NPS. But the critical thing is that you're measuring every one of those strategy elements from outcomes, but you're also mapping in that scorecard what are the leading indicators that we're going for. Now, there are other leading indicators that are very common in enablement that I'm a big fan of. For example, time to first effect, you know, full funnel. What is your time to your first opportunity that you took from conversion through close? One of my favorites is what is your percentage of discounting? If we're doing great enablement, we should see discounting go down. But that's how I view it, right? You got to find that right mix of leading and lagging indicators, but always keep revenue in mind.
Yeah, so interesting. You touched a little bit upon it here, the customer journey, and I think that is really hard to create a balanced and good experience for clients. I think a lot of companies are struggling with that. So can you elaborate a little bit about the concept of the customer journey and how you enable and it's important
Sure.
in creating a cohesive customer experience across all the touch points?
I will. Customer journey enablement is a phrase that I hit on sometime in the last couple of years, because what I found is when talking to go-to-market executives, people that don't live in the weeds of enablement day in and day out, it was confusing for them. They heard people talking about sales enablement, revenue enablement, more recently, go-to-market enablement. And again, if you're not following these things on a day-to-day basis, it's like, well, it's confusing. I found that by using the term customer journey enablement, again, talking to those outside of the enablement space, they could get their heads around that because a lot of them had mapped a customer or a buyer journey and that sort of thing. And when I launched Revenue Flywheel Group about a year ago, I was surprised, pleasantly surprised to find out in the US at least that no one was using that term. And so we were able to trademark it. And that's what we've really tried to build the business around. And here's the concept. There are common elements of enablement and training that will translate across all teams. Let's talk about how a methodology, for example, right? Not just a sales methodology, but just methodology at this level. If I'm a seller and I'm coming in and meeting with you as a prospect, and I have been enabled with the business acumen to come in and actually talk to you about what's going on in your business and be able to add value to that conversation. Mind you, I'm not saying a 28-year-old AE is going to be able to stand toe-to-toe and experience with an executive with 20 years, 20, 30 years experience under their belt. However, that salesperson can still come in with enough knowledge to have a valuable conversation with that person. So if that's our starting point, we want a discovery experience that's business focused, not demo focused, not feature focused. How do we make sure that's happening? So, in the marketing side, we talked about this. How are we going to support? How is product thinking about the problems that the new releases are solving? How is that being packaged in a way that the AEs and the sales development SDRs can digest it and internalize it and be able to talk about it in intelligent ways? Part of doing business focused and outcome focused discovery and sales process is you understand the gaps in the customer's or the prospect's business. You understand where they're trying to get to, what that future state is, what is the impact of not reaching that state, and all of those things that don't get captured in a lot of company sales process. But when you're doing it the way I'm talking about, it is being captured, and that is now being handed off to your services and customer success teams. Think about how valuable that is. In my experience, it's very rare that the services and success teams are working with the same people that made the buying decision, which means if sales isn't capturing and documenting the things I'm talking about, they can't do their job effectively. But when they have that, now think about my first meeting with you as your new customer success rep. And I have in my, might be, you know, in whatever our CRM is, I understand what were the business problems that you and the other decision makers were trying to solve with this. What are your expectations for the product? What are the outcomes you're expecting to see, and when are you expecting to see them? And now I'm able to come in from the beginning and make that experience from sales to post-sales much better for you. I'm also in a much better position to be a true advisor and make sure that the purchase you made is being fully utilized and you're seeing the benefits you expected. That's an example that the I'm going to call it a value chain that we want our prospects to receive. And especially in SaaS, where renewal cycle starts the day they sign a contract, it's even more critical so that by the time that renewal does come around, why would they leave?
So exciting. So one thing I'm thinking about here, creating sales enablement supporting processes or systems, how do you typically recommend a company to divide them into different buckets? How much is training? How much is marketing material or sales support in terms of slide decks or landing pages? And how much is tech and how much is other things? What can you just give us a little bit of overview? What tool set you typically recommend or implement at clients?
The percentage of each of the things that we're going to talk about are going to vary depending on where I've worked. And I'm finding it varies even with clients that I'm working with. But thank you for asking that, because there are four pillars, if you will, that I have over time developed and built any framework around, whether I'm doing it as an internal VP or as an external, you know, coming in as a consultant. And they are the thing you just hit on a lot of them. Number one, sales methodology. To me, there's not just one sales methodology to rule them all. There are several that I've used in the field to achieve the kind of results we're talking about. But you have to find one that has the right element. So number one pillar, sales methodology, implemented and adopted as well. Teaching, it's the easy part, right? Number two are what I would call the skills training. So methodology to me is it's important. It almost stands alone. But then what are the skills, hard skills and soft skills that are needed? And the product training. So we have skills, and product training is then another track that we need to make sure we're addressing. That starts with their first day as an employee through hopefully at least one promotion that we've successfully set them up for so that we can keep them at the company. The third pillar are tools. Tools for me at this level could be marketing assets. It could also be conversational intelligence, data scraping tools, the things that we need in today's world to have successful outbound and and sales processes. And then the fourth pillar to me that almost caps them all is coaching. None of those things will be effective or as effective they should be if you don't have effective leadership enablement in the organization. And by that, I mean leaders that have been taught and coached how to coach. Too many sales leaders, and I was one of them, equate coaching with pipeline review. And they're actually very different functions. So, to answer your question, always those four, the mix and the percentage are going to vary depending on a company and their go-to-market, how many channels to market do they have, and that sort of thing. But hopefully, that's helpful.
Yeah, really. Super interesting and good pillars there. I just want to touch a little bit about the technology because there's so much going on in the sales and marketing tech space and also in the sales enablement space. But what do you find? Is this an area you do recommendations in or work with clients in, or what do you find most effective in enhancing sales teams' performance when it comes to techs or tool stacks? Or do we put too much emphasis on that maybe?
That's an interesting way to phrase it. I think we could spend a whole episode talking about the evolution or the revolution of tech in sales, in our careers, right? But this more succinct to your question. The biggest developments I've seen, I'll start first with the impact on sales teams directly. Conversational intelligence platforms, to me, are one of the biggest game changers. In all my years of managing sellers, and frankly, when you're building out enablement, one of the challenges we have is you cannot, and frankly, should not be on every sales call as a sales leader. And finding the, ability to see at a macro level what's happening across your sales team and the conversation they're having has always been very, very difficult. And so with conversational intelligence, we now have a way to assess that. And we have a way to measure if we've rolled out a new methodology or new approach, new service. We have a way to see fairly quickly how's that being adopted in the field. So to me, that is one of the biggest improvements to be able to lead and coach sellers and also to train them. The other thing that I get very excited about is the ability for enablement to now measure with, I would say, a very high degree of correlation, the impact that they're having on those revenue outcomes. Only sellers, and in some companies I work with, customer success reps, only they generate the revenue. Enablement does not. However, enablement has to be able to show reasonable and consistent correlation. And now there are a variety of tech platforms or middleware that have been developed that make that. When I got started, we had to find very manual ways of doing it, and it was still not what we wanted. So there's no excuse at this point for any enablement team to not be able to walk into a QBR and talk about cause and effect in a way that the rest of the executive team can understand. Those are probably the biggest ones I've seen. AI, and maybe we'll get into that separately, I see as having impact across both of those things and more. And so if you want to get into that, we do a little bit of that as well.
Yes, please. I mean, AI is disrupting so many areas right now, and I suppose you have also seen things happening in the sales enablement tools area. So, yeah, is there any particular things on the AI side and how that can supercharge the sales enablement efforts we're seeing now in companies?
So many things. Again, right? How much time do you have? But seriously, some of the bigger ones I'm seeing that I get excited about is, first of all, AI is going to help us eliminate some of the non-sales activity time that sellers are spending, which, depending on whose research you look at over the years, as low as 30%, a little less even sometimes, of a seller's time is spent actually selling. Now, look at some of the tech we have. I use an AI note taker. I've been using it now for almost a year. Something like that is a game changer. Because I mean, I am a seller. I run my own company now, right? If I don't sell, I don't eat. So rather than the old way, which was you and I talking and me trying to do discovery, but constantly having to look down, take notes, find that balance between writing and listening and keeping an interesting conversation going for you. Then when we're finished, having to transpose all of that into my CRM. Now with the tool that I use, and mine's one of several out there, all of that is being captured with in my case, it's over 90% degree accuracy from what I've seen. And the few things that are wrong with context, what's going on. And that gets put right into my CRM. That over the course of a month and a quarter is going to recover, I don't even know how you'd measure, dozens of hours or more of selling time back. So that's a pretty basic thing for AI at this point. That's almost table stakes, but if you think about what that allows sellers to do, it's a better customer experience because now you and I are talking and I'm not looking away from you all the time. And I am also listening much more deeply because I'm not trying to write everything down. And it's also going to get in the CRM, which doesn't happen very often. Another example that I see is more on the enablement side. I recently saw a demonstration with one of the tech platforms that I work with, where role plays and training materials, even videos, are being converted into other languages by AI. We talked about the global challenges of enablement a little while ago. One of them is, frankly, outside of doing something English, Spanish, and maybe if you're lucky, Chinese, that was best case a lot of times, sadly. Now, with the tech that's available, there's no reason that I can't translate that into whatever language my sellers need and have AI do it rather than paying for expensive translators that most companies don't have on staff or the money for. I was blown away by that. The ability for AI to get better and better at creating decks, slide decks, training decks. I don't think we'll ever walk away from having a human with expertise in instructional design and learning theory to oversee it, but now they're freed up to do higher level work and just make sure that the AI is creating what they need it to. Those are a couple of examples that get me excited that are going to save a lot of time.
And I like your take on AI that we will become so much more, active in selling rather than doing the CRM updating and all the boring stuff that nobody likes anyway. That's great. I come from the SDR space, just want to zoom in a little bit about that particular part of the sales enablement area. What strategies do you recommend for specifically for SDR teams to enable them and trying to boost their performance? Have you seen anything or tried anything that would be interesting to share?
I have, and I'm going to start because this is beyond SDRs. This is a corporate thing, but it will benefit the SDR success directly. This may be a bit controversial for some of your listeners, but please stop having your SDRs set up demos as the objective of the first call. And I know that's very popular, and we don't have time to get into my reasons why, but I will share one thing. Imagine if you walk into your doctor and you're sick, and after just a few introductory questions, he or she starts writing out a prescription for you. How much confidence do you have in that prescription? Are you going to go and take that medicine, right? But we do that all the time to our prospects, a couple of perfunctory questions, and we're off showing them what they need with a full-scale demo. Now, how does that equate to SDRs? When we're asking our SDRs to do that, we're making it more difficult for them. Without giving them the knowledge and the acumen to be able to talk a bit about the business level concerns of those prospects, we're making it more difficult for them to get people's attention. We're making it more difficult for buyers are not going to respect them. They're going to see them as, just an SDR, and which is not fair. And they're also the appointments are not going to be as sticky. But imagine this. What if we enable our SDRs to understand if one of my ICPs is a CIO and enabling my SDRs with what are the top three or four things that we know CIOs are doing with our product now. And then back off from that, what are the problems that CIOs are solving by doing those things? You never want to have your SDR start doing an AE's job for them. But that doesn't mean they shouldn't know much more about a customer than they typically do. So that's where I start, is let's educate them. They want to have value-added conversations with prospects. They don't want to be dialing robots. And let them come in and talk. Now, when they're setting up a meeting, the AE has some idea of what it is the customer's trying to solve, but we only know what it is. We haven't done the discovery. That's for the AE to do so they can build their value, build a relationship. But now you have an SDR that's perceived much differently because they're talking much differently. They have the ability to hook people's interest much differently because these are things rather than the typical outreach we see, right? Hey, look at our latest round of funding. Look at our, you know as well as I do the sorts of things that get put out there that frankly people don't care. And they don't care about your product, but they care about what they're working on. That is the biggest way that I can see we elevate the SDR's experience as an employee so that they're having better conversations. They feel better about their job. And frankly, people are more interested in talking to them. That's where I start with them. There are a lot that goes into that, but it's a different approach than a lot of organizations take with their SDRs. And that's part of what I try to help companies see.
Wonderful. You know, you're working a lot with change projects and you know, implementing new systems, new methods, new things that will create better performance, hopefully, and so forth. And, you know, every leader would say in general, feel that implementing change is really, really hard. You know, yes. People are hesitant or won't work this time either. And they have all the baggage of bad experience from failed change projects and things like that. So can you talk to us a little bit about if you have any ideas or tips or tricks around overcoming the resistance to change and so forth, especially when it comes to, say, enablement, the sales team?
Yeah, and even within enablement, right? Is it change because of new technology, change because, but I love the question. And there are some principles that I've learned over time. I will start with executive sponsorship. Enablement cannot exist in a vacuum. There should never be an enablement initiative that is a surprise to the sales leaders and is not aligned directly to, say, we all work for an EVP of sales or CSO, right? That is not aligned to what are their top objectives. Now, that's not to say enablement should just take orders from the sales leaders. We don't want to be waiters. Enablement should be thought leaders, and they should be challenging. They should be coming in and showing what they, you know, they're, but it's a very collaborative effect. So that's number one. Do not do it in a vacuum. It will not work. It will fail. Number two, when there's any kind of change, bring the sales leadership team through it first. If you're launching, for example, a new tech platform, have a leadership-only training for it. Let them ask their questions in a very safe environment with their peers. Many sales leaders are not going to speak up and ask questions if they're being taught or trained on something at the same time as their team. When I was a leader, I wanted to be able to lead. I wanted to be able to pull my team along, but I couldn't do that if I wasn't prepared in advance. So by doing that, it's a better experience for leaders. And frankly, now you have more people helping drive the change at the street level. Another best practice I use is find a pilot group. Create a group of ambassadors. Work with those sales who identify. They will know who on their team is. There are always people that are early adopters. There are always people that are excited to try the next thing. That are also hopefully successful sellers. We don't want to distract them. But then we'll roll it out with that group. Get their feedback. If there's things that are buggy in the experience, they will tell you. But they will also become your advocates or ambassadors with the rest of the team across. So does this slow down implementing a new platform and such? Yes, it might. It might slow it down 30 or 60 days. However, the trade-off in that investment is you now have a united group of folks, both the leadership and individual level, that understand it. They understand the initiatives behind it. They understand what it's trying to solve. And even if they don't 100% agree with it, they're in a much better position to then help drive that adoption across the organization. The last thing that I'll say is you cannot over-communicate. In my experience, everyone does better if they understand why they're being asked to do something and if they understand the underlying reasons and the outcomes. Don't hold that back. I don't know why companies do, but communicate very openly why you're doing it. Again, change is not going to get easy. It's still difficult, but those are best practices I found that go a long way to helping it stick.
Yeah, wonderful. I love that. Wow. You have shared so a lot of really interesting nuggets here, Paul. So thank you so much for that. If we go down a little bit here, summarizing this, what future trends of sales enablement do you see coming around in the next few years here that maybe sales and, SDR or customer success managers should have on the horizon or be specifically attentive to? Do you have any trends you see coming up?
Yes, there are definitely trends. The one thing that I will say is with technology, we saw, I believe, with the explosion of technology that happened in the last few years, we saw a rush to adopt it without necessarily being thoughtful. And that created its own problems. So now we have so much coming at us with AI. Now is the time to sit down and figure out what is the blueprint for how we're going to use it, because that's coming. Now, what that's going to help fuel and the trends that I see are a move more and more to doing not just sales enablement in a vacuum, but doing more enablement broadly across all teams. That's a trend that some of us have been doing for a long time. And I think, again, from my own experience, it just comes out of the reality of working in this, when you're in the selling environment, you see what's broken, you know it needs to be fixed. There are a lot of people talking about it. That's really good. But the trend needs to be, what does it look like? How are we defining it? How are we actually measuring it? Another trend that I've seen see happening is enablement teams are understanding more and more the importance of measuring revenue outcomes as opposed to just what I heard someone call butts in seats and smiley sheets. Yes, it's important that people show up. But what are they doing with that knowledge? What are they doing with those skills? And enablement teams are starting to see that that's more and more critical. We've sadly seen a big shakeout in job loss in the tech industry in these last years. And so it's more critical than ever if you're an enablement leader to be able to show how you're paying the rent, so to speak, with the programs and the things when you're asking sellers to be involved. And I think that trend will continue. But what gets me excited is people will get better at it. So now people who are talking more about it, a year and a half or so ago, you did not hear nearly as many. Now people are talking. We'll get better at it, which means our profession will evolve and get better as well. So at a macro level, those are trends I see and I'm excited about. But I don't know what's coming out next week. I don't think it'll change what we need to do, but how quickly we get there and how effective we are doing it in 6 months, who knows? But those are two things that have got to continue.
Yeah, fantastic. So great, Paul. Thank you for sharing all this and thank you for coming on here. Just a closing question here. I'm sure a lot of our listeners are, getting inspired by this and maybe want to connect with you or read more about you and your content or Flywheel Group. Where can they connect with you?
Revenueflywheelgroup.com is an easy place to do it. But I'm also very active on LinkedIn, easy to find there, and always welcome connections. In fact, always enjoy learning and following and hearing from others. So would love to hear from anyone that's interested in these topics.
Awesome. Well, make sure to connect with Paul at LinkedIn. So thank you so much, Paul. I wish you all the best with Revenue Flywheel Group in the future and all the endeavors with sales enablement. And I'm sure we will hear more from you in the future.
Thank you.